Greetings. This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and we are Building Bridges. We probe deep into the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Palestinians in Gaza are enduring yet another bombing, campaign, and a barbarous siege by apartheid Israel. All shipments of food, water, and electricity have been suspended as apartheid Israel sets out to starve an entire population. Israel continues to bomb and destroy schools and homes and hospitals, while at the same time ordering the evacuation of more than 1.2 million Palestinians from Gaza. These are acts of genocide and amount to the collective punishment, a war crime, of an oppressed people whose right to self-determination has been denied for the past 75 years by an oppressive apartheid regime. And we urge, we demand an end to all U.S. aid to apartheid Israel and for an immediate lifting of Israel's inhumane blockade that cripples Gaza and will likely cause thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of deaths by starvation, thirst, injury, and disease. We now feature Jeff Halper, an Israeli-American anthropologist, author, lecturer, and political activist, who has lived in Israel since 1973. He's the director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions and a co-founder of the One Democratic State campaign. Jeff, thank you for taking the time to be with us during these very, very painful times, but it is very good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mimi.
The first thing that you can give us is you were speaking to us from Jerusalem. If you can give us a sense of what's happening on the ground, both in terms of what your understanding of events now that are escalating in Gaza that indeed have been fomenting the killings and protests that have gone on in the West Bank, and then the general political climate in areas like Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and so on. So let's begin by understanding both actually, physically, and then politically what is happening on the ground to set the atmosphere for the rest of our discussion.
I mean, you're right in terms of Israel not really caring about the Palestinian population and the implications of what it's about to do in Gaza and what it has done in Gaza over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, it's a self-contained entity, sort of Israel, you know, and it only thinks about itself. And maybe other countries do in a way, but, you know, I think this has to do with how Israel was created. We'll talk about this a little bit later, as a settler colonial entity that, as you said, came in and took over another people's country. But unlike the Native Americans, the Palestinians are still half the population. Even the other half has been driven out, as you mentioned, in the Nakba in 1948. But the other half is still here. And not only are they here, but they're a national group that claim rights of self-determination, as you said. And they're resisting. I mean, the Hamas attack was a part of the resistance. I don't like the Hamas program, I'll say right away. I certainly don't support this extreme religious fundamentalist program they have. And certainly the massacre that has to be happened of the Israeli civilians was also a terrible thing. But nevertheless, it is a part of the resistance. So a settler colonial country like Israel, especially being confronted with the people that they've tried to displace, that simply have refused to be erased. They refuse to be displaced. They refuse to be excluded from the political picture, is defensive. You know, it's always looking over its shoulder. It can never relax. And of course, everything that has to do with Palestinians and then beyond, the Arab world, Iran, and so on, is security linked to terrorism. So that's the world that Israelis live in. They have their little bubble because, you know, they try to be a little Europe in the Middle East. They're completely divorced from anything Middle Eastern, of course. And they're always, always, always trying, and they have to, in a way, to pitch their case. In other words, they haven't, settler colonialism, Zionism hasn't won. It isn't like, okay, we conquered the country, we suppressed and got rid of the Palestinians, and we're in the UN, and now we're a normal country. You know, no, it still has to you know, because of people like you and all the other critical people out there, including here and there peoples and governments, it always has to be pushing its case. And therefore, there's no crack for anything critical. You can't be critical because you're calling in question the whole enterprise. And it's the same with this situation we have today. You know, you've had massive demonstrations. I know in Washington, in London, there were 150,000 people. Many other parts of the world, including, of course, the Arab world, massive demonstrations, nothing here, nothing whatsoever. And it isn't that people like me on the left, you know, wouldn't want to go out and protest the invasion of Gaza, this impending ground invasion, but we would be killed. I mean, there's no, even though we're Israeli Jews, I mean, usually you'd say that for, it's happened to Palestinians. It's something like more than 50 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th, many of them in protests or in support of Hamas or whatever, by both the Israeli soldiers and settlers and the Palestinian Authority, which, of course, is a collaborationist regime. So there's no space here, not politically, not in terms of trying to be critical, and certainly not in terms of putting what Israelis see as the massacre of those people in the South into any kind of a political context. I mean, anytime, I lost a good friend last night in the gym. He asked me, you know, what I thought, and I began to talk like this about a political context to what happened, and he just walked away and said he never wants to talk to me again. Because here it's as if you're trying to excuse what happened, or you're trying to minimize what happened, or you don't respect. In other words, the discussion in Israel today is a simple binary. We're mourning the victims, and all the time on the radio, on the TV, and so on, you've got all the stories, and there really are heartrending stories of the families and what happened on the one side, and then on the other side, vengeance. There's no politics; it's vengeance. They did this to us; we have to do it, but at a more massive scale, as Netanyahu said, in a way that they'll remember for generations. So this has really become genocidal. And that's not just a phrase. And not only in that, you know, you're attacking a small place. You know, Gaza's the size of Omaha, Nebraska. You're not only attacking a small place with 2.5 million people that have nowhere to go, but you're, you know, there's no way that you can't destroy that population. If you don't kill them outright, as you've been saying, and Amira said in Democracy Now! Before you, I heard a little piece, there's no way this humanitarian aid can really get in and can ever be meaningful. So we're really shooting ducks or shooting fish in a barrel, I guess is the expression. And that's not an issue here. That is simply not an issue. The idea kind of is all Palestinians support in Gaza support Hamas. Actually, and it's true in a way, all Palestinians are against Israel. Well, you know, here again, you go back to that bigger picture of settler colonialism. They all have to be against, you know, a colonized, oppressed people can't accept its oppression. It can't recognize Israel. They can't say, yes, Zionism is legitimate and we really don't have any claim to this country and we might as well just, they can't do that, of course. They're resisting. They're fighting for their own freedom. They're fighting for their own national rights in their own country. And so the little jump between supporting Hamas, you know, and being a killer and killing Israelis and being the target of our vengeance and simply being Palestinian because you're against us is very, very tiny. And that's why for many Israelis, they don't make that distinction. You know, we're going after Hamas, but if we have to kill a half a million Palestinian civilians on the way, well, that's okay because they're implicated. You see, they're really a part of that. And so we are facing, in almost, it's like a Greek tragedy where you see this happening. We're facing a genocide in Gaza. I mean, I don't know if more people are going to die, God forbid, from bombs and the ground invasion itself, or from starvation, lack of water, you know, simply the wounds that they have. You know, Israel has been carpet bombing Gaza, you know, since October 7th. And, whole neighborhoods have been razed. You know, the hospital and many other medical facilities. You know, the people have nowhere to go. Can you imagine? It's like the earthquake that they had in Afghanistan just last week as well. There, you know, there's frantic attempts to rescue people from the ruins. In Gaza, you can't rescue people. You're not supposed to be there. Where Israel is bombing, you know, you're supposed to be evacuating and going. So what do you know, you're evacuating and leaving your whole family under the rubble. In other words, there are probably thousands of people that survived the bombing that could have been rescued, but there's no way to rescue them. So this is, I mean, I don't think genocide is too big a word. This is a genocidal attack on a population. But again, it's not an issue here. Here, it's they killed our people. This is vengeance. Vengeance is good. All over Israel, there are signs we will win. We will have victory. Now, what victory means, you know, nobody really asks. And it's all in military security because there again, that's the language that Israel and Israelis, that's the only language they have because they're always defending themselves against this constant Palestinian threat to their settler colonial entity. And at the same time, they can't be critical themselves because if they're saying, wait a minute, are we doing the right thing? Should we be bombing Gaza? What about the Palestinian people? And then beyond that, you know, what happens if we do conquer Gaza? You know, is there a political solution? All these questions that should be behind a ceasefire and not invading and thinking about where do we go, those questions can't exist because they call into question the very legitimacy of Zionism.
I still want to get a little further into the problematic, the inherently reactionary conceptualization and actualization of a Zionist government and the concept of whether or not a theocracy can be democratic. And then I also want to just parse out our time to understand Israel certainly as an outpost for hegemonic interest, imperialist interest of the Western world in the Middle East and all those things coming together to really destroy the indigenous Arab population, to destroy the Palestinians, and then to leave some time to talk about, indeed, where does the international community go from here towards building what you have been working on, the question of a one-state solution. Indeed, right. From the river to the sea, Palestine must be free, and how it can do it with a non-theocratic, a secular state, which is the only possibility for the existence of a democratic state and government in the landmass of historic Palestine. Just quickly start again, helping people understand that Zionism and being anti-Zionism is not about being anti-Semitic, that really it is the apparatus that is reactionary and exclusionary and must, in effect, be dismantled.
Zionism is a national movement. It came out of Eastern and Central Europe in the late 19th century when other national movements were rising. You know, that's when a lot of the nation states we have today emerge, of Hungarian nationalism, Polish nationalism, Greek nationalism, and the Jews that always had seen themselves as a people apart, they weren't Russian, you know, they weren't Poles, the Poles rejected them. They were really, they and the Roma were the only kind of nations within nations that were indigestible, and that's why you had the persecution against them. So in some ways, for some Jews, the idea of, yes, we're a national group, but our homeland is in the land of Israel, Palestine, you know, made some sense. The Jews did not buy into it. As the Zionist movement began to emerge in the early 20th century, something like 3 or 4% of the Jews of the world, you know, the vast migrations of Jews that are the foundation of the Jewish community in the United States were from that time. They came from Russia and Eastern Europe west. The United States, England, Canada, even Australian places, they did not go to Palestine. So Zionism was not the Jewish national movement. It was a movement. But because of all kinds of historical factors, World War I, the fall of the Ottoman Empire, British interests, and now the British begin to come in, and the British want a mandate, and the British, for their own anti-Semitic reasons, Lloyd George and Churchill and everything, saw the Jews as really, yeah, kind of controlling the world, controlling the media, having their fingers in governments all over. They're a worldwide people, you know. And so the Jews, so we'll talk about this in a minute, this gets into the transactional politics that we have in the world. That's the problem with international relations. Everything we talk about is the people. You know, as you say in your introduction, equal rights, justice, human rights, all these kinds of things are absolutely irrelevant. They're laughable in international relations, in government circles. So, you know, looking around, Lloyd George in England says, well, I mean, the Jews have a lot more to give to us than these Arabs running around in keffiyehs in the desert, so we'll support the Jews. It really had almost little to do with Zionism. It had to do with the fact that the Europeans, the British in particular, took Zionism as their vehicle for going into Palestine and then setting up its mandate system. And then Zionism got strong enough during the mandate, militarily, but also in terms of population. Then you had the Holocaust that was, you know, unforeseen. All kinds of things came together that created in 1948 the beginning of a state that was strong enough then to conquer Palestine and throw out the Palestinian population. We have to say, though, that this also works in the Arab world. Israel went into the 1948 war together with Jordan. Jordan wasn't the enemy. They divided the country. When Syria came in 1948, it came in largely against the Jordanians, that it was afraid we're going to link up the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan, would link up with the Hashemite kingdom of Iraq and squeeze Syria in between. There are all kinds of things happening that kind of went in Zionism's way and it helped it. So it managed to create the state of Israel and then become what it's become. You know, that's the problem we're facing, is that, you know, as long as Israel, and my book War Against the People talks about this, as long as Israel can make itself useful, if not indispensable, to the international community, they'll accept things like this invasion of Gaza, even including the Arab world. And Israel has made itself useful as a military security surveillance enforcer of world capitalism. It's very strong. Why does Saudi Arabia want to make peace with Israel? Not because they accept Zionism or anything, but because Israel's very useful for repressing their own population. And by the way, attacking Iran, if that's necessary. So that's the problem that Palestinians face, is that even though people see the justice of the cause, even though they're suffering, even though they're facing now a genocidal attack in Gaza, what do they have to give to the world? They have no resources. They don't have any oil. They're not geopolitically important. They can be marginalized by the Arab governments. And so in a sense, they can't stand up to this transactional politics that you see with Biden, is saying that we need Israel. Israel is our ally. Well, the Palestinians aren't our ally in any way. I mean, what do Palestinians have to offer militarily or in any other kind of a way.
Well, Jeff,
And
let
that's
me.
where they get excluded. And that's where Hamas, in my view, that was that terror of erasure. And I think that was also a part of it. It may be in the worst way possible in terms of this massacre, but it was a way of saying, we are here. You are not going to eliminate. You're not going. And they succeeded. Today, you can't think of a normalization process in the Middle East without the Palestinians. They've put themselves back in the political game. And I think that's an important achievement.
We've really begun to deliberate on the issue of that, the root problem, Zionism, the philosophic, ideological underpinnings of the state apparatus and the campaign to Judaicize the occupied Palestinian territories, which is really the apparatus of apartheid adopted in response to the inherent resistance of the Palestinian people, which is always there, just like here, the resistance of the indigenous populations continues, even though there has been, of course, a Holocaust created a genocide against their population, which has reduced them significantly. Resistance continues. So the resistance of an occupied people. Then we also immediately demand the, of course, lifting the occupation. But really, in the 3 minutes or so that we have left, we now understand that a theocratic state cannot be democratic. So the question really is the development of a long-range program. What do we mean when we say liberation? We've got to have an immediate ceasefire. We've got to make sure that aid immediately gets into Gaza, stop the brutality on the West Bank, release the prisoners, some significant numbers of which are now children and so on. But along with this, what does liberation mean? The group that you are working with, but the issue of really one state campaign.
Look, Palestinians, I agree, have always resisted and continue to resist in whatever ways they can. I think the big argument, I think with Hamas, maybe the whole idea of armed struggle, that most, you know, Palestinians have been excluded from every possible way of moving their cause forward. They've been frustrated in negotiations. They've been frustrated in the First Intifada, which is nonviolent resistance. They've been frustrated in trying to appeal to international law. They have nowhere else to go. And armed struggle seems to them almost the only way left. But I think what's happened to Hamas has probably put that to rest. So the question is, now where do we go? And I think they have to replicate what the ANC did in South Africa, and that is mobilize their only real allies, which are not the governments that are, again, transactional, but are the people. The people you exactly talk about in your introduction, the people, us. The Palestinian cause, in my view, has reached the level of the anti-apartheid struggle internationally. There's tremendous support. What's missing is an end game. Is a political program that has to be articulated and formulated by Palestinians, you know, together, I think, with critical anti-Zionist Israelis like me. But if this is the Palestinian struggle, essentially, and the fact that there is no political program today that people around the world can mobilize around and go to their governments and say, this is what we demand. In South Africa, it was one person, one vote. We don't have that here in Palestine. That's the missing piece. And I'm hoping that after this, it's shaken up the Middle East enough that there is an opening, you know, in the next few months when we get back to political discussion, that we'll be able, we have this one democratic state campaign that's developed a very strong 10-point program that has a lot of support, you know, to create a democracy, one democracy, one citizenship, one parliament in this entire country. And I don't have time to get into other details, but I think that space and that need, desperate need for Palestinians to step into this vacuum now, the PA is not going to do it. Hamas has been eliminated as a political actor. That vacuum exists. That's fatal for the Palestinian cause. So they have to step in with a political program that can only be one democratic state for everybody, replacing Israel with one democratic state over all of historic Palestine of equal rights for everyone. That's the way to go. And I think that has to be our movement here. We have to get our act together here, get this political program, and then mobilize all of you as a potent political force. And that, I think, is the political challenge that awaits us after this genocide that is going to happen.
Well, we're going to protest the hundreds and thousands that showed up to the Capitol, that are showing up in New York, that are showing up across the globe. Keep the pressure on. Make sure that there is a ceasefire, that aid immediately gets into Gaza. Stop the ground invasion. Put the pressure on. Hey, hear that, Biden and every one of the opportunistic imperialist leaders and the leaders across the Middle East. So much more to talk about. We will. I want to recommend strongly some of Jeff's books, Decolonizing Israel, Liberating Palestine, The War Against the People, An Israeli in Palestine. They're really imperative must readings. Thank you for the work you've done. We've been speaking with Jeff Halper, who is the founder director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, and now has devoted a good deal of his time internationally and within Palestine towards the development of a one-state program as the really the meat behind the issue of what liberation means, and of course with the right to return and reparatory justice and all that might encompass. Jeff Halper, thank you again. Again, Decolonizing Israel, Liberating Palestine, The War Against the People. Get these books, inform yourself more, and have the courage to stand up and be counted and not be intimidated, not be bullied for the Palestinian people, for a free, free Palestine. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jeff Halper, for the work you do.